from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Just a box of rain. Next up on this morning's forum program, Jay Blakesburg has been photographing rock concerts since he was a teen back in the 1970s, eventually going on to document the heyday of the Grateful Dead and the birth of the alternative rock movement with Jane's Addiction and the Pixies. Since 1987, he has shot over 300 assignments for Rolling Stone magazine, and he shares his stories from four decades of music history and talks about his new photography book, Jam. It's all up ahead here on Forum after this. And it's just a box of rain. I don't know who put it there. Believe it if you need it, or need it if you dare. And it's just a box of rain. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Days, don't you worry anymore. 'Cause when life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door.
Well, you don't even necessarily have to be a deadhead to recognize that. That's the Grateful Dead doing Box of Rain. And why are we playing the Grateful Dead? Well, we have a famed rock and roll photographer with us in studio this hour who really began his work with photographing the Grateful Dead and has done a book of photographs about the Grateful Dead and has a new book out called Jam. Jay Blakesburg has been photographing rock concerts over four decades and has established himself as really one of the leading rock and roll band photographers. His new book is called Jam, and it's all about jam bands, among, well, other bands that he's photographed, and it serves to confirm and expand the high regard in which his work is held. He's author of a number of other books which showcase his work, including that book of photographs I mentioned on the Grateful Dead called Between Light and Dark, and a more recent work, Traveling on a High Frequency. He joins us for this forum hour in studio. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Welcome. Well, it all began for you, I guess, coming out of New Jersey, maybe even before Springsteen had established himself. Everybody thinks New Jersey and rock and roll, they think Springsteen. And the Grateful Dead kind of was the magnet for you, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I was a suburban New Jersey teenager. And, you know, like many of us, we were influenced by what our older brothers and sisters were listening to. And my older sister took me to a Grateful Dead concert at Englishtown, New Jersey. It was a pretty legendary concert. It was 1977, 150,000 people. And that was my first Grateful Dead concert. But it was a year later, almost exactly, they were doing these annual Labor Day big concerts on the East Coast. And so September of 78, I borrowed my father's Pentax camera, went to see the Grateful Dead, took some pictures, and those are my first, you know, somewhat professional photos of the Grateful Dead, and the adventure continues to this day.
And it has been quite an adventure. Now you have these kids with these expensive digital cameras and their iPhones. Doesn't make them photographers. I mean, you really are. In fact, one of the things that fascinates me about your work is you're up there, really, up close and personal and on the stage. And I know you knew Jim Marshall, and I've interviewed Jim Marshall back in the day when he was really king of... In fact, I have to say one thing about Jim Marshall, because he had a reputation for being a tough guy and a mean guy. I thought he was a sweetheart, by the way.
Heart of gold.
But you are a co-executor of his estate, and so obviously you have a close relationship with him. And he was complaining even back in the day about how he had special access, but a lot of photographers don't. Now, you have special access, and it comes out of building up trust, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's what one of the things that Jim always talked about was trust. I think even one of his last books before he passed away was called Trust. And yeah, I do co-manage the Marshall Estate, so I have that that inspiration on a regular basis and kind of get to see his access and understand where that came from and be able to be in that headspace. And, you know, I've been very, very fortunate to connect with many, many musicians and gain that trust and therefore gain that access. You know, the rules typically when you're shooting a live concert for most photographers is you're allowed to shoot the first three songs from in the pit, and then you have to leave the venue sometimes, or sometimes you have to just put your cameras away. Sometimes you can go out in the house and shoot some wide shots and things like that. And I've gotten to a point where most of the artists, almost all the artists that I work with, I'm able to shoot the whole show from on stage, backstage, in the pit, in dressing rooms. And I think it's that trust that Jim Marshall always talked about that you need to achieve to get that access. And I also don't take that access for granted. You know, that's a a privilege, not a right. And I recognize that every single time I go to a show.
Another thing that came across, well, in my reading about you, was that you don't take for granted is the relationship with these musicians. And I think this has been very smart of you, if I may say so. You don't gush. You treat them like a regular person, and you're sort of down to earth with them. I mean, that's been your MO all along.
I think you kind of have to be. Like, I don't think they're looking for, you know, fandom with the people that are working with them and around them.
You get enough of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they want people that can sit down and talk about their kids or my kids and you know, real life. But, you know, we also talk about music, and we might not necessarily be talking about – you know, their music. I was at a show last weekend at the Fox Theater in Oakland with Widespread Panic, and I was downstairs in the dressing room with Jimmy Herring, the guitar player, and we were just talking about our kids and what they're up to. We have kids that are similar in age, and we were talking about what we were doing when we were that age and the music we were listening to and how we were influenced. And, you know, it's just a natural conversation to be comfortable with these people and not be like, oh my God, that show you played last night, that guitar solo was unbelievable. I don't think they really want to hear that. You know, I might say, you know, great show, epic moment, wow. But, you know, you just – it's a different conversation.
Well, you speak to it in your work. I mean, the reality is that some of your work, which I admire, by the way, is it gets these moments. A lot of the photography you do, these – and you're a real lens man. I mean, you're there in the visual sense. So you're getting these moments. I mean, you get guys leaping up in the air and looking ecstatic, looking almost orgasmic in some instances, or looking like they're just experiencing something that's – transformative.
Well, with my new book, Jam, that was sort of the prerequisite for the photos. Like, I didn't want a lot of people, you look on Facebook and you see photos of famous musicians or actors or whatever it is, but let's take a musician and he's standing there with a guitar, strumming it and singing into the microphone. That does not make a brilliant photo because the guy in the photo or the gal in the photo is famous or a rock star. What makes a brilliant photo is what you just described, that energy, that magical musical moment that's captured in that split second when you click the shutter. And that's what Jam is. Jam, I wanted Jam to be a collection of photographs that had this incredible energy to it. A lot of people that have looked at Jam have said they've never seen so much movement and energy in so many still photographs before. And that's what this collection is. You look at pictures of people like Michael Franti and Spearhead, which is a Bay Area group. And
very politically active group.
Yeah, and Mike, I've been working with Michael since the late 80s. You know, dear friend, wonderful person. He changes lives every time he gets up on stage. And that's the energy that his band portrays. And you know, when you look through these photos, you go through it and your bands like the Mother Hips from San Francisco or ALO, Tea Leaf Green, Jane's Addiction. I mean, you know, Phil Lesh, Primus, all these bands. It's energy, energy, energy. And that's what I wanted to capture. And I think that's what Jam says.
Well, Phil Lesh had shown a little energy when he met up with my sister in Cleveland, Ohio. But that's a whole other story. We're talking to Jay Blakesburg, photographer for Rolling Stone magazine and other publications. Actually did 300 Rolling Stone assignments. And he has gained a reputation, as I said, as, somebody who can really get the light and the energy and all of those things together and gets up close in ways that – I mean, actually, let's talk about some of the shots you did early on with Neil Young, because those are pertaining here, yeah?
Yeah. So there are some pictures of Neil and Jam, and I've worked with Neil fairly regularly over the last couple decades. I did my first portrait of him a couple of days after Bill Graham was killed. I shot him for a magazine cover. Remember Tower Records?
Sure.
They used to have a magazine called Tower Pulse, and I shot him for the cover of that. We went down to his ranch, and those photos were in my previous book, Traveling on a High Frequency. And Neil Young does the Bridge School benefit every year, and I've shot that for, I think, 24 years in a row now, maybe 25. And so the Bridge School, great organization. They use my photos for, you know, their efforts and fundraising and
whatnot. For disabled kids.
Yeah. And so, you know, like Neil, you know, people like Neil Young and Carlos Santana, you know, these people travel on a high frequency. That's where the name of that book came from. You know, these are unique individuals. Tom Waits is an incredible person to photograph.
Some very funny stories I read about you with Tom Waits jumping over fences and things.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tom is just incredible. Yeah.
And also telling stories is part of what you do, but you tell the stories visually. You know, I could do a whole hour with you probably just with the stories from the bevy of those that you have. But I'm interested in what stories particularly stand out in terms of just encounters with some of these really terrific musicians who, by the way, high frequency makes me think of the fact that a lot of them are high a lot of the time, too.
Yeah, or maybe they were at one point. You know, I mean, Carlos Santana is high on life. You know, I mean, he's a wonderful person to work with. I adore Carlos, and I've spent a lot of good moments with
wonderful
him.
Wonderful guy, yeah.
Yeah, and I shot the back cover of the Supernatural record, the 40 million selling record. And, you know, so like I said, these people travel on a high frequency. But like, you know, some like that Neil Young photograph, one time I was photographing for Musician Magazine, which doesn't exist anymore. It used to be owned by, I think, by Billboard Magazine. And I was going down to Skyline Boulevard out near where he lives in Woodside, the Mountain House. I think it's either Mountain House or Mountain Home. I can't remember. It's a restaurant there. And I pulled into the parking lot. I was driving down Skyline at the speed limit, and I pulled in. It was a gravel driveway. I hit the brakes. I skid through it and, you know, made all this noise. And he was doing an interview with Kurt Loder from MTV, and they all came running over to me to be quiet, you know. And then I sat down to shoot Neil, and the publicist looked at me and said, "You have 10 minutes. Because these guys, they want to, you know, like for me, I want to make a brilliant photograph. I want to make the best photograph I can, because I'm only as good as my last photograph if I'm going to get hired tomorrow by somebody else, right? Who cares what you did 30 years ago? You got to be good today. You got to be relevant. I want to stay relevant. So I want to make a great photograph." He just wants to go have lunch, right? He just wants to get out of there. The publicist looks at me and says, "You have 10 minutes. I shoot one test Polaroid. This is pre-digital. Pull the Polaroid. I'm waiting for it to develop." Neil starts talking to Kurt Loder from MTV, talks to him for 10 minutes. The publicist comes back and says, "You're done." I said, "I took one Polaroid. Haven't shot any pictures yet." He goes, "Kurt, get out of here. Neil, sit down." You know, and I start shooting. 10 minutes later, you're done. You walk away. And, you know, and that's how you work with these people. But you come prepared. And the shots in the jam of Neil, which you're looking at now.
I'm looking at the one from the expression on his face. I'm supposed to be able to create word pictures here. That's, you know, why they pay me the big bucks here. But just the expression on his face, it's almost like he's excruciating, you know, playing
his
guitar.
Neil puts out so much energy on stage. It is phenomenal. And that's why I love to photograph Neil Young and Crazy Horse. And Neil, in any situation, I photographed him dozens and dozens of times. But the energy he puts off from that stage is magical. It's electricity just flying out of his guitar. And the facial expressions show that. And so I formed this relationship with him and his manager where they trust me enough to be in the pit in front of the stage for the whole show.
Do you have to like the music? Do you have to?
You know what? I'm very lucky because I would say that 99.9% of the music that I shoot, I love. There's very, very, very little music that I've shot in the last 25 years that I do not love. Early in my career, I shot some bands because I felt like I had to make a statement or I had to be there. But I just don't work with bands that I don't love.
We're talking, by the way, if you just joined us, with Jay Blakesberg, photographer of Rolling Stone magazine and other publications. His new book is called Jam. This book was a Kickstarter, by the way, which must have an interesting story behind it.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny because I presented this book to a whole bunch of different publishers, and they all turned me down. The book business is a funny business. You know, if you do a book on baked potatoes and it sells a million copies, then all the publishers want more books about baked potatoes, right? So that's how the book publishing world works. And so they looked at Jam, and they said, it's not about one artist. Can you give us a book just about the Grateful Dead or just about Carlos Santana or just about Dave Matthews? And that's not the book I wanted to do. And what they didn't realize is that Jam, there's a whole huge community. When I first started shooting the Grateful Dead, there was the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers. And now 25, 30 years later, there's an entire genre of music that was kind of birthed out of this Grateful Dead experience.
In fact, you know, I have a niece who is, thinking of a couple of people in my family, but thinking about my daughter, who is with a Fish fanatic, and they remind me of the Deadheads.
Well, sure. Fish was probably the next band beyond after the Grateful Dead that made it big in that genre. And Fish is an absolutely incredible band. I mean, them on stage is just the magic. It's magic.
I think my daughter's boyfriends, they can start to count the number of concerts they go to or how many cities. In fact, people are listening to say, who the hell is Fish? Let's hear a little bit of this.
Someday I may tell the tale of metal tangle. Right into your world I fell. Without you now I wander, soaking, secretly afraid. But in your grasp the fears don't last, though some of them have stayed.
A little taste of Fish there, so to speak. That sample in a jar by the jam band Fish, and you can actually hear their trademark guitar work there. And by the way, you can see some of Jay Blakesburg's photographs. Is our website up and working, Irene? Great. Okay, thumbs up on that. So you can see some of Jay's work on our website, kqed.org/forum, and we'll give you an opportunity to talk with him. I know there are going to be a lot of people asking you about cameras and the technology you use and all that sort of thing. I mean, just maybe some basic advice before we get back to the bands and the jam and all that, in terms of how you do what you do.
You know, there's a lot of people now, like you said earlier, they have a digital camera and they think they're a professional photographer. You know, you have a website or a Facebook page that says your name with photography after it. That doesn't make you a photographer. You know, I come across young photographers all the time who don't know who people like Richard Avedon are or you know, Irving Penn, you know, people who are big influences on my career. You know, early in my career, I would go through magazines and tear pages out of magazines of photographs that I loved and stare at those photographs. And
I just mentioned, I actually interviewed Richard Avedon, but there are people who are saying, who is Richard Avedon?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's more than a digital camera. I mean, it's, you know, people who have no idea about, you know, design and color and proportion and how all those things work in terms of, you know, now you know, when we used to shoot film, you actually needed to know the technical skills behind shooting film and how to expose it properly, as well as the creative side. You know, it's a technology-based art. Photography has always been a technology-based art. And now the technology almost can overrun the art part of it. And people don't understand how to make that transition or how to pay attention to that to create, you know, engaging photographs that just go beyond, you know, a snapshot. And I just think a lot of people, certainly in the music world, there's, you know, anybody can get a, you know, a digital camera and somehow get a photo pass to go and shoot for some website and be in front of a band and take some photos. And it does not mean that they are creating, you know, brilliant photographs. And I'm not always creating brilliant photographs.
No, but you've used that phrase a number of times, brilliant photographs. I know that's what you want to create and what you
absolutely
hope you do. And in some instances, I think you hit the mark. But my curiosity about that is engaging photographs, brilliant photographs. What's been, you got a real range and diversity. You got, in this book of yours, Elvis Costello and the Black Crowes and the Flaming Lips and, you know, many of these bands actually who we featured here on Forum, Moon Alice and close friend of mine, Pete Sears, is right in there. Mm-hmm. You also got quotes from these people, which is...
Yeah, all the text in the book is written by the artists.
I know, and I want to talk about that too, but what I'm interested in here is who has been really tough to capture? I mean, in terms of more challenging to you, in terms of creating that engaging or brilliant photograph, is there one group that really was extraordinarily challenging to you?
Not necessarily in jam. You know, when you're shooting a live concert, you're at the mercy of a number of elements because you're not controlling the lighting. Okay, so that's probably the first thing. And so there could be these epic moments happening on stage and there's no light. You know, the lighting has changed drastically over the years at concerts, and some of it is brilliant and some of it is difficult. And so that's part of it. You know, if you look at jam, there's photographs, there's great shots of everybody. Obviously, if it's a daytime show at a festival, you're not at the mercy of those
lights.
It's
a little more challenging.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that, again, coming back to the access thing, because I'm shooting a whole show, I can wait for those moments, you know. The magic doesn't always happen in those first three songs, both from the energy coming from the band or the lighting or any of those things. So being in a position to wait for all of those elements to kind of converge into that one moment and being ready for it, right? That's the whole thing. I mean, I see too many photographers that are sitting around busy drinking a beer at a concert instead of pointing their camera at the stage, and they might not be ready to shoot, you know, and you're going to miss that moment. So you need to be on and you need to be working. And that's, you know, people always say, oh my God, I can't believe how hard you work at shows. Like, you are on from the minute the music starts until the, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why I'm able to capture what I capture.
So it makes you a professional. I mean, really, I believe in professionalism, and I think, you know, you have to be on to be a professional, and you're on, clearly. You're on now. there's also, you know, a sense of these quotes that comes across as encapsulating. Oh, you got the fans in here, too. Some great shots of fans and ecstasy and so forth. But
which brings us to my next book.
Hippie chicks.
Yeah. You
know, somebody's going to say, you shouldn't use the word chicks. It's politically incorrect.
Yeah,
I know. You're going to get beat up for that. But
yeah.
Let me go back to a point I was going to make about a lot of the quotes in here. There are certain themes that come across. you know, the loss of self in the music, the thrill of the music, the excitement, the charge, the sense of what you capture in a lot of your images is what these artists, these musicians communicate about their work,
and what
about
they're
what
feeling
they do
like
as professionals. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the reason that a lot of what they're talking about is similar in that vein is because we ask the same questions to almost everybody. There were some specific, you know, like there's a picture of Carlos Santana with Jerry Garcia, and we asked him specifically about that photo because I wanted to run that picture in the book. And so he quoted on that photo.
Talked about my brother, Jerry.
Yeah. And so, you know, we asked these artists, like we basically had like a very simple four-question questionnaire. And one of them was, you know, tell us what it's like. You know, what is that moment like on stage? What, you know, what do you feel? What do you see when you, you know, and so people answered. That was the main question that people focused on. And so even, you know, the band Mo, who are good friends of mine, I just directed a new video for their new single, their No Guts, No Glory is their new record. Al wrote the foreword. You know, he's the guy that's on the back cover with the lasers and the guitar. All these guys were talking about what it's like in that same vein. You know, like Al says here, you know, I think it's fantastic to be part of the jam band world. It's one of the most vibrant music scenes that's thriving today. There's so much exciting music being created, and it means a lot to me that we're considered a relevant, significant band in that community. I think that's awesome. Al Schneer. You know, this band has been together for 24 years now, and they're playing like at the top of their game. So it's like they're still feeling it. The fans are feeling it. And it just it goes around and around.
And it's a good time maybe to hear a little bit of Mo. Let's do that, Danny.
She's living with the perfect disguise, blonde hair and blue eyes. At home being one of the guys, blonde hair and blue eyes. Wherever she stays, you will go. Wherever she stays, you will go. She's the star.
That's Mo doing their song Blonde Hair, Blue Eyes, jam band, which formed back at the University of Buffalo in 1989.
Yeah.
Been around for a while.
So that song we were just hearing, Blonde Hair, Blue Eyes, yeah. I directed the video for that song that's out now, and that record comes out, I think, in a month or something like that.
This whole idea of jam, you know, I mean, you jam means you improvise, you play music, you do all that, but it also makes me think of jelly. There's something kind of sweet about the word, you know, that
yeah.
comes to mind. And
it's funny, when I first started doing the book, I was going to do a little section where I was going to define jam in all these different ways, you know, a sweet, spreadable jelly, improvisational, musical, you know, but I ended up never doing it. It was just a little exercise that I wrote down. But, you know, what you're saying about the improv thing, see, for me, and that's another beauty of why I love this music so much, is that, you know, I love the Rolling Stones, and I love Tom Petty, and I love all these bands that when they go out and they play a tour, they might play the same set list, the same songs, the same way, you know, 30, 40, 50 nights, you know, over the course of 2 or 3 months on a tour. But these bands that are in this book in general will never play the same song the same way twice. And every show is different, and every guitar jam is different, and every solo is different. Fish,
musicians
Mo.
Have told me this over the years. Actors have told me this over the years. You know, you can play the same role over and over, but every night is different. When you're an artist, depends what kind of artist you are, obviously, but you do it differently for different audiences, different shows, different nights, different afternoons, whatever. We're talking to music photographers.
That's
Jay
why
Blanford.
You want to come back every time over and over again.
Exactly right. Get it right. We're going out here, actually, with a song called The Wheel by Jerry Garcia. And join us in this conversation. You can do that now by calling in or a toll-free number, 866-733-6786 if you have questions, or for Jay Blakesberg or comments. Again, 866-733-6786. You might want to tell us what your favorite jam band is. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is now in working order, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with photographer Jay Blakesberg. His new book is called Jam, and it's a book of rock and roll photography. And he's been at it for 40 years, 40 years of rock history, and not in this book. This is more the jam bands and all, and asking questions about not only maybe your favorite jam band, but also, well, any jam band concert that particularly stays in your memory in a very vivid way or in an eidetic way that you might want to bring up here. Possibility that actually Jay was photographing that concert. You can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments, which may have questions about photography as well, onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to hear a little more music. We wanted to bring in some music into this, and actually, if you go to our website, kqed.org/forum, you can actually see a number of the photographs that Jay Blakesburg has taken, including the photograph on the cover of his book, My Morning Jacket. And let's hear a little bit. That's the song Holding On to Black Metal by the Louisville, Kentucky band My Morning Jacket, which was started back in 1998 by Jim James. And again, they're on the cover of Jay Blakesburg's book, who is spending this time with us. Boris asks, is it still possible to make a living starting out as a photographer today? What advice would you give to music photographers that are just starting out today? And you say that many of the magazines and publication channels that help make your career are either gone altogether or in digital form, which often means less lucrative.
I guess my advice for starting photographers is go to law school or medical school. it is very tough. I mean, you know, you can make money as a live concert photographer. I don't think you can make a living just as a live music photographer. When I first started out, I shot live concerts because that was the easy way to get access and to kind of, you know, figure it all out. But I figured out very, very early on that if I wanted to actually compete and shoot magazine covers and magazine features and album covers, then I needed to learn how to do portraiture. And so I taught myself how to do studio lighting and do studio portraiture and experimented. And I'm more or less self-taught. And so I've shot a few hundred CD packages. I was just in LA all day yesterday doing a portrait shoot of a brand new artist named Ariel, 23-year-old girl, guitar maven.
And you mentioned you do videos too.
And I direct videos as well. And so in today's world, you kind of need to expand out. And so, you know, it's a kind of a natural evolution to also be able to direct videos. And so I do a lot of branded content for social media for a lot of companies. And a lot of it is music-based. I work with a headphone company called Ohm Audio, who makes great products, and Gracenote, which is a music technology metadata company over in Emeryville. And so they're all sort of music-based, and I do a lot of video work for them and photography for them and stuff like that.
Getting tougher for photographers, though. As you know, I've had a friendship for many years with Howard Schatz, and you know, he's at the top of the food chain in photography and talks all the time about how so many digital images are accessible off the internet now that it's changed the whole nature of professional photography.
And also, you know, a lot of young kids don't understand the nature of the business. I mean, a lot of people think it's cool and groovy to go and shoot a rock band for three songs and give your photos away. And, you know, but technology changed the music industry. It changes the book industry. It changes the photography industry. You know, it lowers the bar for entry, and it also lowers. I also truly, truly believe that we live in a world of mediocrity in a lot of ways on the creative level. And I think that a lot of clients are willing to accept mediocrity because it costs them less money. And I think that's sad.
Remember when Nixon pointed, I think it was Carswell, to the Supreme Court, and people were saying he was mediocre, and he said, well, a lot of Americans are mediocre. They should be represented by somebody who's mediocre.
Yeah.
Let me go to our calls, and we'll begin, Lee, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Lee.
Hi. I just wanted to say my favorite jam band is any band that Steve Kinloch is part of. I remember some really great concerts at the Warfield with Trey and Phil Lesh. And my question was, I like to be right up front in the concert. And, you know, it's excruciating work getting in that front row. And how do you balance trying to preserve the experience of the concert goer who might be under an influence of certain things, and you taking the pictures, and how do you keep them in mind?
Well, first, to answer your question about Steve Kimmock or Common, Steve Kimmock is also in this book, Jam, and he is a great guitar player and a friend, and I love his playing. I try to be very, very conscious of the people that are in the front row or on the rail or behind me, and I try not to block people's views. I have to say that there are moments where there's something incredible happening on stage and I need to be in that spot and get that shot, and sometimes I'm blocking people, but I do my very, very best to not block people's views and not be in their way. And that's a lot of times why I also try and just go up on stage and get out of the way that way and not be in the pit for the whole show or stay in one spot for too long and try and move around. But I am always aware of that and very conscious of your space and your drug intake.
And Lee, we thank you for the call. You want to talk about drugs and rock and roll for a moment? Before you kind of evaded a little bit by saying, well, you know, they're not all high all the time, but a lot of artists are high. There's a guy in your book who says, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that's what I'd like to do 6 to 8 hours a day. I don't remember who it was, but
it's Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction. And, you know, it's interesting. Most of the bands that are in Jam, I would say, are what we'll call evergreen artists. They've been around for a while. And I think a lot of these artists have gotten that out of their system. Like, you know, we're not backstage with, you know, strippers and cocaine and you know, crazy parties backstage at these shows. That's maybe some other young 23-year-old kids are doing that. But most of these bands are family men and family women. And, you know, there's a little bit of maybe drinking. And I would imagine there's some pot smoking. I personally have not smoked marijuana in over 30 years. And I can still hang out with these people. And it's not an uncomfortable situation. So, you know, these are older, more established, refined musicians. And
just out of curiosity, you sound like you gave up marijuana. Were you?
I think it made me socially stupid. And I decided that I didn't want to be socially awkward and stupid at a young age. I mean, I was, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old when I stopped smoking pot, and I just never did it again. And I don't miss it at all.
Could you, we want to get to some more calls here, but since we're talking about youth as opposed to maybe being more seasoned, there are a lot of younger musicians who you've discovered, a lot of locals like Jackie Green and Nikki Bloom, the Southern Avid Brothers. Let's talk about.
So Nikki Bloom, who lives here in San Francisco, is a very dear friend of mine.
She's number 8 on the list.
And I have, I directed a couple videos with her, and I've shot a lot of pictures of her. Incredible singer,
songwriter.
You got
a lot of dear friends, Jay, don't you?
Well, I'd like to consider, you know, Nikki Bloom lives 10 minutes away from me, and we hang out, and I go to her house, and I go to her shows, and I'm dear friends with her husband, who's in a band called the Mother Hips, who's also in my book.
Can we hear a little Nikki Bloom? This is a song called Too Little, Too Late.
I knew you from the day the door got kicked in. The gang was hanging around because we had some things to talk about.
Nikki Bloom singing Too Little Too Late. You really like her. She's with a group called the Gramblers.
Yeah, Nikki Bloom and the Gramblers. And,
I mean, you like photographing her.
Yeah, well, she's high energy on stage, you know, very beautiful woman. You know, even though Nikki's music might not necessarily fit into this jam band genre, like that, you know, classically fit right in there, she's influenced by it. So her bass player also plays in a band called ALO, who's very improvisational. Her guitar player, Darren Ney, is like influenced by the Grateful Dead. They actually did a benefit up at Terrapin Crossroads, Phil Lesh's club, and Phil sat in with the Gramblers last week, and the smile on Darren's face playing with Phil was incredible. And that's what Phil Lesh does every day up at Terrapin Crossroads, is he reinvents the Grateful Dead songbook with all these young musicians, and Jackie Green being one of them. Jackie's a regular up there, and you know,
you're actually promoting Phil Lesh on this
program.
I know. I'm the host of. All right, let me go to some more calls. Let me bring Julie on next. Hi, Julie, you're on.
Hi there. Well, first of all, I'm really excited to order your book, Jam. I think it sounds great, and I'm getting it for one of my kids who I started taking to some concerts. He's a guitar player and drum player, and he got interested in Umphrey's McGee, who are originally from Chicago, most of them, and I'm also from there. And so I took him to summer camp, which is a festival outside of Chicago. And I stuck out like a sore thumb there, but I began to become a fan of Mo and Umphrey's McGee. And Umphrey's puts on all kinds of music camps for their fans, and they interact with them, and they're really an amazing group of people. And like you were just saying, they're they have young families now, and they're not sort of your typical drug scene. It's a big drug scene. Kids are obviously drinking and smoking pot and stuff at these festivals, but I found it to be really fun and really peaceful group of kids, even though it's kind of hard to watch all that. But the bands, they're just incredibly talented musicians, and so I'm really excited about your book. And I don't believe that we have a culture of mediocrity as far as creativity is concerned.
Right. Thank you, Julie, for that call. By the way, Lynn writes, that was not Boxer Rain you opened with. It was Uncle John's Band by the Grateful Dead. Did I say Boxer Rain?
You did say Boxer Rain,
okay.
And I caught
and
that also.
You didn't correct me.
Because we had already moved on.
Well,
I want to comment on Julie real quick. Julie, thanks for being interested in my book. You can order a signed copy at rockoutbooks.com. That's my website. And then Summer Camp Music Festival, I've been producing and directing the video at that festival for the last, I think, 6 or 7 years now. One of my favorite festivals. I'll be there this year, so if you come with your son, find me and say hi, and you won't stick out because maybe we're about the same age. And Summer Camp is an amazing festival, one of my favorites. It happens Memorial Day weekend in Chillicothe, Illinois, and I will be there. And
well, you get around.
Yeah, it's a great, great, wonderful festival, and it's kind of anchored by Umphrey's McGee, who she was talking about, and Mo. They kind of each anchor a stage, and then a bunch of other bands. It's over a 4-day Memorial Day weekend, and wonderful festival. And the Umphrey's guys are really, really, really sweet, wonderful people.
Here's an email from Gail who says, thanks for the great show. 35 years of being a Deadhead. Please thank Jay for all the great photos. Two questions. One, how does he get that really cool, slightly gritty, grainy texture he's been posting lately, Greek audience photos, etc.? And two, why are his photos so expensive online? This poor Deadhead would love to buy some of his great work, but I can't afford it. I'm a starving artist myself.
Yeah, well, my look... when I first started shooting digital photos 8-9 years ago, I hated the look of it. Everything looked the same. And when we shot film, whenever I would do a job, we would shoot black and white film, color film, fast speed film, slow speed film, 4x film, 2.25 film, 30, we had all these textures and formats. And so we could create styles and looks and feel. And all of a sudden we were all shooting with 35mm digital cameras and all our pictures were looking the same. And so my full-time digital retoucher, Ben Kaut, and I sat down and we spent months and months and months working on custom filters. And
you have a full-time digital retoucher.
Yeah,
no wonder you're expensive.
Yeah, exactly. So we developed a look and a feel for my photos. We, my goal was to make my digital photos to look like film. And so we add noise and grain and contrast and different filters to kind of create that look and feel, because I wanted my work to stand out and look different. And I think that a lot of people have started to emulate my look, and now there's a lot more simple tools than just Photoshop, which you actually need skills to use, where there's a lot of push buttons and, Instagram and other off-the-shelf software programs where you can create those looks. And so I think more people keep copying that look over and over again.
It's given you more tools in terms of the new technology, particularly things like Photoshop. Is it good to have those in your quiver? You long for the days when perhaps things were a little more pure?
At first, I longed for the days when things were more pure and simple, but I have embraced the technology in a big way. We were very early digital adapters. Very early on, we were still shooting film, but we were scanning everything in my studio and delivering all of our jobs digitally, and our clients love that. And so early on we sort of formed a digital component to my studio, and I hired a full-time guy just to kind of develop that system, and it's kind of been that way since. But it's, it could be the bane of our existence. I mean, we have to manage, a million digital images, from here till eternity on multiple hard drives until who
knows
when.
There's a thought to contend with, yeah.
So it's not just having a bunch of negatives anymore, so it's a different thing. And my work is expensive because business is expensive, and digital is not free, and I've got to buy a new $5,000 camera every 18 months. months and have multiple hard drives to store it all and workers' comp and employees and everything else. And it's expensive to be in business.
Let's get some more calls on. Marco is joining us from up in Eureka. Hi, Marco.
Hello. Hey, I had a couple questions, but that what you just commented on about you, why is your work so expensive? It's along those lines, new photographers who, like you say, take pictures and are happy to give them away, and photo users are happy to take them for free. Meanwhile, if you have a family to feed and equipment to buy, you get lambasted because you charge a reasonable rate for your photography. I guess the copyright ownership issue for photographers who have rights and can make money off of their product is getting shot down more and more and more and more. And comment on that. But also the digital thing where people are taking pictures and you spend as much time after you go click looking down at your image to see if you got it. Do you even look at your stuff during a concert, or are you shooting like you're shooting film and you don't even look chimping, I believe is the word. Those two things. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I definitely review my images. I try not to, because you definitely miss moments by looking at your viewfinder. So I try not to. I mean, I'm typically trying to look at images on my viewfinder just really to nail down exposure, typically, is what I'm looking for.
I had an image of you almost glued to that viewfinder, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be to capture that shot. But I do find myself doing that, and I do find myself missing moments because of doing that. So you got to be careful not to get vortexed into that little screen.
Well, you're what I would call a real lensman, and you wonder if a lot of that art of being a lensman has become lost through the years in photography.
Absolutely. Like I said, I just think that people don't know their history, and I think that you need to understand where we came from to, you know, become that lensman, to understand, you know, the that moment and how to capture that moment. I think it's something that, you know, yeah, people can be born with it, but I think that I think you start out with a certain innate ability from the beginning. You know, like people said when I was in high school and I was taking pictures, I'm like, God, your pictures are so good. You know, but I think it was because I knew how to compose a photograph.
Well, you have a good eye.
I started out with a good eye, maybe not a brilliant eye, but I started out with a good eye, and I was able to develop and train that eye. And I think a part of that is just by doing research and looking at other people's work and figuring out what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, and incorporating that into mine. I mean, for years.
It's also your passion. I mean,
If you have no passion for what you're doing, then you need to walk away right now. I mean, that's the number one ingredient. And that's why I keep coming back for more. I mean, you know, I've been shooting live rock and roll for, you know, 36 or 7 years now, and I'm still doing it, and I still love it, and I still get a rush from it, and I still enjoy every single moment of it. And so if you don't have that passion, why?
Well, I feel the same way. You just expressed very nicely. I mean, early on, I thought, I can use my voice. I like my voice, you know, and you develop it through the years, and you keep liking doing it. You keep doing it. There's a listener who tweets, it's a little bit peculiar. It's all about the Creedence Clearwater Revival. Now, I don't know what that means, but have you ever shot Creedence Clearwater?
No, they had broken up before my time. I mean, I've shot John Fogerty. I love Creedence Clearwater Revival. I enjoy their music and still listen to it to this day, but I've never shot them.
Another caller from up in the Russian River. Jim, hi, you're on.
Yeah, I'd like to suggest a great photo op for you. Invite you to come to a jam in the Redwoods, to Save the Redwoods, the Old Grove Festival at the Forest Theater in Armstrong Woods State Reserve. The stage there was built in 1932 by the WPA, one of the great, beautiful, picturesque venues. This year it's the Mother Hips and Graham Lesh, Phil Lesh's son, with his great new jam band, Midnight North. And so if people want to see that, if you'd like to come up, bring your books, shoot the beautiful Old Growth Redwoods with the jam in the Redwoods, just look up oldgrovefestival.org.
Thank you. Check it out.
Got a good plug in there. Thank you. Here's Klaus, who says, I heard Jake Blakesburg say he started with a Pentax, as did I. What do you use now, basic and good DSLRs or expensive high-end cameras?
I've been a Nikon guy pretty much my whole professional career. That Pentax was my father's that I borrowed. And
Your father a photographer too?
My father was a shutterbug in the 60s just as a hobby. My father's a certified public accountant, but always, you know, always loved to take pictures, and still to this day loves to take pictures. And so maybe I got a little bit of that from him. And so my first, you know, real camera that was mine was a Yashica. And some of my early Grateful Dead photos were taken with that. But when I moved to the Bay Area early 80s, I bought my first Nikon, and I've been a Nikon guy ever since. And I shoot with a Nikon D800 as my digital camera of choice.
Gee, I wish we had some Paul Simon music here. I got a Nikon camera. I want to take a photograph of you.
Yeah.
Alfred asks, Jay, have you ever done any jazz photography? And if so, musicians you admire?
Very, very little jazz photography. I mean, I've shot, you know, Jimmy Smith and Joe Henderson, and, you know, those guys are no longer with us. Some portraits of people like that. But no, I've not shot a lot of jazz. You know, that was a Jim Marshall thing. Jim shot a lot of brilliant jazz artists, as well as his rock and blues and stuff like that. We're working on a new book for Marshall, by the way. It's going to come out in the fall. It's going to be a book on the Haight-Ashbury from 1965 to 1968.
And what's this Hippie Chicks book again?
So my next book is going to be called Hippie Chick. I think the subtitle, if I can get my friend Blair to allow me to use it, is Hippie Chick, A Tale of Love, Devotion, and Surrender. And it's basically women at music festivals and concerts. And it's sort of about the fashion, the passion, the muse, the inspiration.
Women now or again back in the day?
Well, it will have photographs from the early 80s and through the 80s, some Deadhead girls. You know, what is it about women who will travel 600 miles to go see a concert? People do that for Phish or Mo or
Help
Humphreys.
Me understand that. What is it about those women?
Well, it's inspiration. It's muse, you know, and then you go to a Black Crowes concert and there's, you know, the entire front row is women and they're hanging on every word that they're singing and they know every word. And there's guys as well, but I'm a heterosexual male and I like photographing women. And so there's this fashion element, there's this passion element, there's this inspiration, you know, there's all this great stuff. And then these little subsets of, you know,
that whole phenomenon though of rock musicians, most of them being male up until really the last decade for that matter. Camille Polly has written about this and she is trying to help people understand why women, I mean, you think about those young women screaming at the Beatles. I mean, you know, what was that all about? You know, it's kind of difficult to understand.
It's a connection. So I'm going to try and capture some of that lightning in a jar. I mean, I've got most of the photos already, and we're already starting to work on it. It'll come out in the fall of 2015. And, you know, keep your eyes open for Hippie Chick.
And here's a listener, Anthony, who writes, I was wondering what Jay thinks about Cartier-Bresson's decisive moment. That's a French photographer.
Sure,
of course. I don't
know much about him. But. And again, that's like someone whose history you need to know and understand. You know, I mean, he was a photojournalist. I mean, he was not like an Avedon or a Penn in terms of portraiture and stuff like that. And he was looking for the decisive moment. And, you know, of course, there's a classic photo of the guy jumping over the puddle with the reflection in the rain. I think it's in France, you know, and that's sort of the epitome of the decisive moment photograph. And, you know, again, cell phones and digital cameras and everybody, you know, so many more photos being taken. I think there are a lot of decisive moments. And I think in terms of shooting a live concert, I try and capture as many of those decisive moments as I can. And hopefully there's more than just one at a concert or when I'm doing a portrait shoot or whatever it might be. And again, it's a combination of if I'm doing a portrait, you know, yesterday it's a combination of how I light it and the look on the person's face and the body language. And like, you know, like somebody like Neil Young, he likes it dark when he plays. He doesn't like a lot of front light. And so, you know, somebody like Neil on stage, it's a lot of body language, right? So you're looking for, you know, the guitar and his head and his neck and his legs to all be in that right place at that right time to capture that body language. And that could be the decisive moment. So I think it still is important to understand what that is and look for it.
I alluded before to jumping barbed wire fences with Tom Waits, but you also you spent a day with him, I guess. Talked about his woodpecker imitations. What was that?
Yeah, so I was doing a portrait of Tom Waits. This was probably 10 years ago up in Petaluma where he lives, or he lives up in Sonoma, not in Petaluma. He lives further north of there. And we were driving to a house that he had seen. He had driven by. It had an old car, an abandoned car. And he said, oh, Jay, it's just 2 minutes away from here. We got in his car and drove for 30 minutes down to Petaluma from Cotati where we were set up to do the original shoot. And, you know, we got to this location. And he goes, Jay, I don't know whose house this is, but you're the captain of this ship. You better go up there and knock on that door and ask if we can take pictures. And so I knock on the door. Nobody comes out. We walk up a long driveway. A little old lady comes out and she's deaf and she's screaming at the top of her lungs. What do you want? That car doesn't drive. So she lets us take pictures. We jump over the cow fence. We're shooting and he's doing this Woody Wood. Remember the old woodpecker
Walter
from the 60s?
Lance cartoons.
You know, and he's making that face with, you know, out of the corner of his mouth there, and I'm shooting him in the car driving. And at the end of the shoot, he goes, "Okay, we're done." And he jumped over the cow fence, and I'm chasing him down the driveway, shooting Polaroids with an old 60s Polaroid land camera, and dropping the Polaroids on the driveway. And he jumps in his car and drives away, and it was the end of the shoot. It's a longer story that's posted online somewhere, but it's a
good story.
One of those incredible, incredible moments with Tom.
And speaking of posted online, you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and see some of the work of Jay Blakesburg, which you have posted from this new book, Jam. Here's Elise, who has a couple of questions. She wants to know, is there any band or artist you really want to photograph but haven't yet? And has anyone, publicist or band, ever denied you access?
Yes, we do get denied access. I was down at South by Southwest this year, and Apple iTunes Festival denied me shooting Coldplay. Not that I really cared, but...
You were not allowed to couple with Coldplay to use a...
Yeah, exactly.
The uncoupling of
yes,
Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris
exactly.
Martin.
So yes, occasionally, you know, there are bands that have said no to me, but I typically don't work with bands that, you know, I don't really care about those bands.
And I want you, why would you?
Yeah.
This is another question from Elisa. She says, how has Instagram affected your business? When you use Instagram, are you posting photos from your phone or sending photos from your pro camera to your phone to post? And are there any mobile photo apps you love?
Both. I do Instagram. I believe I'm at Jay Blakesburg on Instagram. And I shoot photos on my phone and post them, you know, kind of in the moment photos if I'm in a club or at a show, just to let people know what's, you know, because people like to get a little glimpse. And then sometimes I do, less often, but I do it. I do take photos of my pro camera and, you know, set them up and just put them out on Instagram. So I do both. Artists that I would love to shoot, I still would love to do a portrait of Bob Dylan. I don't want to shoot, I would love to shoot Bob live. He doesn't let anybody shoot him live. I've shot him maybe 6 times live. I would love to do a portrait of Mick and Keith together. I'd love to do a portrait of Bob Dylan. I think that's about it. Out of, you know, I've photographed those guys all live.
Well, congratulations on Jam. Good to have you with us on Forum.
Thank you.
And continue doing all this brilliant work you've been doing.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it.
And we're going to go out with the Pixies here, a band, one of the bands that actually helped lead the alternative rock movement. This is Here Comes Your Man by this Boston band, the Pixies. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.